According to Lester Brown, buildings use up to 72% of all electricity and contribute 38% of human-made carbon dioxide emissions. Yet we continue to make the equivalent of gas-guzzling buildings by failing to use advances in construction techniques. Today you will hear about super low-energy construction, buildings that reduce climate change while saving big time on energy costs. How to build homes, apartments, and commercial buildings that use up to 85% less energy. It's a European technique called passive house. Guido Wimmers is a passive house expert with many buildings to his credit in his native Austria. He came to Canada partly to oversee the construction of a model building called Austria House for the 2010 Winter Olympic Games. Austria House barely sips energy, even in the cold winter climate of Whistler, the famous ski resort. It is now Canada's foremost example of super energy efficiency. Guido, welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Well, thank you so much.
I don't think most North Americans really know what passive house is. Could you explain the basics for us?
Passive house is a building standard which is just focusing preliminary on the energy consumption. The very first, or let's say the most important ancestor of passive house is actually coming from Canada. It's the Saskatchewan Conservation House, built in 1977. And a few years later, a German physicist took this kind of idea and translated it into German and worked on this one and coined the German word passive house. So from there on, there was a kind of a clear definition what a passive house should be. In terms of energy consumption requirements, energy density, airtightness, heat bridges, and all related things. And the very first one was built in 1991 in Germany, and from there on the movement grows. Right now we have roughly about 20,000 or a little bit over 20,000 units built so far. And now also the very first official certified passive house in Canada.
And what are the numbers behind this? If you could just give us a brief outline of what the house has to meet.
The most important one is the energy density, which means how much energy do you need to heat or cool your house. And this is 15 kilowatt hours per square meter.
Is that annually, or how is that measured?
Yeah, that's annually. So 15 kilowatt hours per square meter per year. So you take your floor space and multiply it with the kilowatt hours, so you get your total bill, for example.
Right. So I may have already misled our listeners a little bit, because passive house in German doesn't really just mean housing. You're talking also about offices and municipal buildings and so on, aren't you?
Right, yeah. The whole thing started with a smaller residential one. The very first one was a fourplex, for example. But since then, I was involved in schools, in office buildings, in institutional buildings, whole kind of different buildings are possible. We still call them passive house because that's just the original word for it.
Do these buildings still need a furnace or air conditioning?
They need some heating, yeah. So it's not a net zero. You minimize your energy consumption by 90%, but there's still 10% left, so we still need a system to deal with the last 10%. So this could be a very small heat pump or other systems are possible. But you still need some heating or some kind of heating system for the winter. But just this one could be a very, very small one.
And I think in one of your talks you mentioned, I think it was an office building in Europe, where you'd put in an air conditioning unit, but then it never needed to be used.
Right. This was an office building actually for the hydropower supplier of a province in Austria. So they invested into a new office building and built that one as a passive house. We've had, originally everybody thought, okay, we need some cooling as well. But it turned out because the envelope was really good built. So first of all, very good insulation, no heat bridges, and kind of smart way to deal with solar heat gain. So we have never had the problem to go into overheating in summer. So at the end, the office building, there was not the necessity to cool it, at least not over 4 years or I think 5 years now the building is in business.
You know, this is interesting. I talked to a fellow in Massachusetts who had tried to build something close to passive house standards, and he mentioned that they had put in heat pump that was fairly expensive, and now he's looking back and thinking that it added quite a bit to the cost of the house, and they really use it so seldom, he's wondering if they could have just put in a couple of electric heating panels or something and saved quite a bit on it.
Yeah, we have seen that in the past quite a few times, because people usually don't believe that the heating or cooling power that you at the end need is really that small or not existent. So people won't want to spend some money into backup systems because they don't need the calculations. But the calculation tool we use, the PHPP, the Passive House Planning Package, is just from my experience one of the most accurate programs. So you can really more or less rely on the results.
I guess one of the things that bothers me, there's a lot of confusing green standards out there. Could you just tell us how Passive House compares to, say, LEEDs or net zero buildings?
LEED is a very holistic system, so LEED focuses on a whole bunch of different things. That's not so with Passive House. Passive House is clearly focusing on the energy consumption. LEED is giving the energy chapter roughly 25% of all credits. Passive House, 100%. There are a whole bunch of studies out there which say that 85% of the environmental impact of a building over its lifetime are caused by its energy consumption. So I think it makes sense to focus more on energy consumption. But that does not mean that we should forget or don't care about all the other issues. To understand Passive House, it's important to understand where it's actually coming from. A lot of issues which are related to other environmental things like toxic materials or whatever. These materials are forbidden in codes and bylaws in Germany, Austria, and a whole bunch of European states anyway. So LEED still makes a lot of sense for North America because the codes are relatively weak. So you still need a system like LEED to get a very good overall performance. Passive House compared to net zero, I would just simply say that's precondition. You need a very good building to save as much energy as you can, roughly 90%. And then if you want to go with net zero, you need something to generate the last 10% of your energy, which means a passive house with some photovoltaics on top of your roof, for example, can easily qualify as a net zero building.
Last weekend, I recorded a workshop you gave at the Sustainable Building Center in Vancouver, and later I'll tell listeners how to get a copy of that. You surprised me several times in the contrast between construction ideas in Europe versus North America. For example, here we consider all prefabricated buildings to be lower quality, like mobile homes or something, compared to those that are made on location. Why should real low-energy buildings be prepared in a factory?
There are two major issues. One is efficiency and the other one is accuracy. Efficiency in that term that when you go for prefab and work in a shop, you can work more precise and produce less waste. On sites, you cannot work that precise, so the result is at the end, usually you also produce more waste. It's not just the waste, but you bought the material initially, so it's just more efficient in terms of investing your money. The second thing is accuracy. We talk about buildings without heat bridges and very airtight buildings. This kind of accuracy, simply you cannot achieve on site, so you have to go with prefab.
So people are setting up jigs or some sort of forms, and they're making sure that everything is right down to the millimeter so they fit super tight. Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
All right. Well, one other surprise. You recommend heavy use of wood in construction, just when North American Greens have been demanding lower wood use to save our forests. What are the benefits of using wood?
First of all, I'd like to mention that solid wood panels are not mandatory or precondition or whatever from Passive House. Passive House is a system which works with pretty much all types of construction. Could be stick frame, could be brick, could be concrete, or could be solid wood. But beside that, solid wood buildings, so include more wood instead of less wood into our buildings, I think is a very smart thing in a long-term view. As long as we harvest our forests sustainable, it really makes sense to put more wood in our buildings from a climate perspective, because we store CO2, from a perspective to give the forest more value, because if we buy more wood, the forest industry will make sure that everything will be replanted and so on. And in the building itself, it's a very positive impact as well. You get more or less the behavior of concrete, but without the environmental impact of concrete. So instead of using very CO2-intensive building material like concrete, using a carbon-neutral material like wood makes totally sense. The positive impact on your building itself is the thermal mass. Wood has quite a bit of thermal mass. The humidity control function of wood. Wood can manage humidity. The noise reduction, very equal to concrete. And these are very, very positive impacts on the well-being inside your building. And even in terms of fire resistance, solid wood panels are actually very good.
Our guest is Guido Wimmers, an expert in the Passive House design system. There are two common worries that I hear about air-sealed buildings. The first is they may rot, like our leaky condos here in Vancouver. Can you address that?
Well, air-sealed is not the same like vapor-tight. So these are two different issues. With air, we're talking about, air moving through our envelope. If we would allow air move into our envelope, then warm air is going through our envelope and transports humidity, water, with it in the form of vapor. On the way out, it will reach the dew point and condensate, which means with that air movement, we transport humidity into our building envelope. So airtightness is a precondition to get rid of leaky condo. Leaky condos are leaky condos because they haven't been airtight. Vapor diffusion or vapor break or being vapor tight is something totally different. We don't have to be. As long as water stays as vapor, it's not a problem. It just gets a problem in that moment when it turns liquid. And this is the other issue what we have seen with the leaky condo crisis. We have a lot of condensation in these walls, water which is actually coming from the inside. True, quite a bit of these damages are caused by cracks and failures on the outside. But quite a bit of that humidity was actually coming from the inside. Vapor-tight buildings are not necessary because if I design something which is more vapor diffusion open, I'm actually a little bit more on the safe side because then I allow some failures or whatever on the building side and no building is perfect. So this is something very, very different. Vapor open, yes, or vapor diffusion open is a very good thing, but it has to be airtight.
The second concern, I'm sure you've heard it too many times, that it isn't healthy indoors without a lot of air exchange. They talk about sick building syndrome. How do you handle that?
So airtightness is basically focusing on the envelope itself. So I don't want to have any air movement in my construction. But that does not mean that I cannot have sufficient air movement for my building itself. It's just easier to control because I can control it with opening the window or closing the window. Or even better, if I have a ventilation unit with heat recovery. It's not comparable with a forced air system some people are used to. It's just a ventilation system with heat recovery, and that manages that I always have sufficient air, but without the negative impacts of losing too much moisture in your air, for example, because then the air gets too dry and it's just unhealthy. Sick building syndrome describes a whole bunch of different issues. Some I already mentioned, that the mold in the wall, because if you have leaked water, then it becomes moldy. It's basically the idea, and that's also precondition in a passive house, that you have a very hygienic, high-quality air inside your house, and therefore you need an air change in the range of 0.3 to 0.5 times per hour. That's roughly what we humans know, that this is the hygienic level, so enough oxygen in your air all the time, and even if there are some toxic gases or whatever, you get rid of that very fast.
I've only talked to two people who have lived in something equivalent to a passive house, and both of them raved about being in there. They say that the temperature is very steady no matter where you are in the house, and that they like the air quality. Is that the kind of feedback you get?
Yes, absolutely. I was involved in a whole bunch of different types of passive houses, from small residential to mid-size residential to institutional office buildings, school buildings, and so on. And honestly, I never got a negative feedback. All people who were, who have the chance to work in something like that or to live in something like that have never regretted.
Another surprising thing for me in your workshop, when we have a cold northern climate or whether we're in a hot place in the south that needs air conditioning, I've always kind of thought of windows as a hole in the wall where energy escapes, but you design full floor-to-ceiling windows facing south. What do we need for real energy-efficient windows?
Well, windows are, from my personal point of view, the most underestimated building components in North American building industry. Windows are extremely important. They are crucial to achieving passive house standards in several different ways. First of all, as you already said, I think most windows are actually a hole in the wall. So it is very important to get a very decent quality for your windows, and it's not just the glass. It's even more difficult to achieve a very good quality in your frame. So with windows, you have a very positive, or you can have a very positive impact on your energy balance. They are still the weakest part in your envelope. So yes, you have to optimize them just to minimize your energy losses. But on the other side, they are the only part where you passively can harvest solar heat gain. And that's basically also the major idea of passive house. First of all, save as much energy as possible. And then just with the type of architecture and the orientation and so on, you try to, so to say, harvest free solar heat in the winter from the sun. But you just want to have that in the winter and not in the summer. That means the easiest way to harvest your energy is the southern facade. Because in summertime, the sun is in a relatively high angle, which means that a lot of the sunlight is reflecting on your window. And even better, if you have a small overhang or something like that, a simple shading system, don't have to be active, can just be an overhang. You get rid of the sun in summertime, so you don't run into the problem of overheating. So the orientation of the windows is crucial. South is by far the best way to put the windows in. We need still something in east and west and north just to get enough natural daylight, and maybe sometimes you have a very nice view to this direction. But however, the quality of windows is very crucial, and this is the biggest difficulty we have today in the North American market, because there are just a very few windows out in the market which are decent quality, and there's none so far, at least none which is produced in North America, which achieves the passive house standard. So this is something the industry, I'm very sure, will work on over the next year, so we will see the first production facilities for passive house windows, I hope. But that's basically the most underestimated part in your envelope. You need triple pane glass, that's precondition, and you need an insulated frame. And the frame should be, I think, made out of a sustainable material. So personally for me, wood is more or less the only choice. You can have an aluminum cladding just to achieve long-lasting windows, but for the structural part itself, I would always prefer wood.
We haven't really talked about your show project here in Canada, Austria House. Can you describe the intended use and a little bit about how it was built?
Well, the Austria House was a very long story. It started now 3.5 years ago when we introduced the idea to the mayor of Whistler just to contribute as the Austrian nation to the first Green Olympics ever, so to build a legacy for Whistler. And it turned out that this building is truly a very nice legacy for Whistler itself. So last Monday, we have had a little conference in Whistler, and that was the official takeover from the Austrians to the municipality of Whistler. So now they are the owner of the building. This building was hosting the Austrian Olympic team and the broadcaster during the games. And now the municipality took over. As far as I know, they want to put in the kind of a commercial enterprise to rent cross-country skis and mountain bikes in winter and summer. And the second floor will be the clubhouse for the cross-country skiers in the winter and the clubhouse for the mountain bikers in the summertime.
So if you're in the Pacific Northwest, you could visit Austria House, listeners, and just go up to Whistler and poke around there. And also there's a blog about it. You can find a link to that in my Radio EcoShock blog dated April 1st, 2010. Guido, you told the workshop about ambitious plans to make super energy efficient construction perhaps the standard here in Canada by 2020. Do you think that could happen?
let's put it that way. This is a very ambitious goal. So we have had quite a few different discussions with people in the city of Vancouver, with people on a government level, provincial government level. So this is a very ambitious goal to implement passive house criteria in the code by 2020. If that will happen, I don't know. We will see. But at least I really appreciate that these people begin to discuss into that direction. So I think there is an awareness that we have to work on that issue and push more into efficiency, because at the end it's just in our best interest for our society.
Guido, what is coming up for you? Can you tell us about any of the projects that you're working on?
I have quite a busy time these days, because I just recently started my own company, Building Evolution, and I'm working on several different other passive houses. Unfortunately, the way it looks like, none of these will be finished this year, so they all finish at the beginning of next year. But we will see more residential buildings, and we will see very likely the first passive house winery in the world built in the Okanagan Valley.
This is Alex Smith for Radio EcoShock. Our guest has been Guido Wimmers, an Austrian-trained architect now working in Canada. He is spreading the idea of passive house, buildings which barely use any energy for heating or cooling. Find out more at buildingevolution.ca. Guido, I really appreciate your willingness to share so much of your good knowledge with our listeners.
Oh, thank you so much. It was a pleasure.
Check out the Radio EcoShock website. We're at ecoshock.org.